The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Daybreak Hewitt podcast, available every morning on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. It's Thursday, the 25th of April here in London. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Tom McKenzie. Coming up today, mining giant BHP confirms that it's made a £31 billion takeover offer for Anglo American in what could be the biggest deal this year.
Fixed income trading helps to boost Deutsche Bank's earnings, but disappoints at BNP Paribas and Barclays.
Plus, defending TikTok on TikTok, the social media firm says it will win its fight against a possible US ban.
Let's start with a roundup of our top stories.
The world's largest mining company has made a takeover bid for its UK rival, Anglo American. BHP confirming it has made an all-share proposal to Anglo, valuing the smaller mining company at £31.1 billion. Bloomberg's James Woolcock has more.
It could be the biggest shake-up in mining for a decade, and copper is at the heart of it. Anglo American has long been seen as an M&A target. The $34 billion company owns big South American copper operations, which are a key metal for electrification and renewable energy. It's possible that BHP's bid for Anglo could prompt other giants to make a move. Regardless, if it happens, it may be the largest M&A deal of the year. In London, James Woolcock, Bloomberg Radio.
Barclays has reported its latest set of results on a big day for European earnings. Investment bank revenue and net interest income met estimates at the British lender. Pre-tax profit beat forecasts, coming in at £2.28 billion for the quarter. Now, speaking exclusively to Bloomberg, CEO C.S. Venkatakrishnan said that the results are entirely in line with expectations. Venkatakrishnan also shared his thoughts on the London IPO market.
I think the equity market in the UK and equity risk culture needs a shot in the arm, to be frank. I think that it's important for companies to list in the UK, especially for life sciences, technology companies, and it needs many things which are slowly coming together. There's a part of it which is regulation. There's a part of it which is equity investment and people buying more stocks, pension funds buying more stocks. And we think that some of the initiatives, for instance, the public flotation of the government's share of NatWest, should be important aspects of that.
Venkatakrishnan was more upbeat, though, on the UK political situation, saying that a great strength of the UK is relatively little difference in economic policy between Labour and the Conservatives. Getting back, though, to the company story, Barclays share price jumping as much as 3% this morning, currently up by 2.6%.
OK, staying in the banking space, and Deutsche Bank over in Germany seeing a 7% jump in earnings from fixed income trading in the first quarter. That is more than analysts had expected, and better than most of the bank's biggest US rivals. Income from an advising on deals and stock and bond sales jumped 54% as the investment bank made up for a boost from interest rates fading. CFO James von Moltke hailed strong momentum in the investment bank.
We're very pleased with the results there, 13% up year on year. Our FIC business and also within that, the financing business doing very well. So we see very strong momentum and client engagement there. We're also seeing resilience and growth across the other three businesses. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to have a shining star, but seeing resilience on the more balance sheet sensitive businesses of our corporate bank and private bank is encouraging.
Von Moltke added he sees optimism and growth coming back to Europe. Shares in Deutsche Bank have rallied by almost 50% over the past year. So far in the session, they're down just 1.3% so far.
BNP Paribas share price are up this morning, 2.1% right now. Income from fixed income, currencies and commodity trading at BNP Paribas slumped by 20% year on year. That's worse than had been expected. The disappointment taking the shine off the stronger performance in other parts of the French lender's investment bank. Overall, BNP Paribas saw net income and revenue come in ahead of estimates in the first quarter.
Shares in Meta dropping by 16%, around 16% in after-hours trading after the social media giant said it plans to spend billions of dollars more than expected this year. The parent company of Facebook and Instagram says investments in artificial intelligence will increase meaningfully with capital expenditure of up to $40 billion this year. CEO Mark Zuckerberg is warning investors that it could take time for the AI bets to pay off.
As we're scaling CapEx and energy expenses for AI, we'll continue focusing on operating the rest of our company efficiently. But realistically, even with shifting many of our existing resources to focus on AI, we'll still grow our investment envelope meaningfully before we make much revenue from some of these new products.
Mark Zuckerberg's comments on spending, along with a warning that sales growth would be slower than expected in the second quarter, overshadowed the first quarter numbers. Revenue increased by 27% to $36 billion, while profits more than doubled to $12.4 billion.
Okay, so lots of earnings news, but there are some other stories to think about. The US has been secretly sending Ukraine its long-range army tactical missile systems, or known as ATACMS for short. They've been doing that since February. President Joe Biden signed a new aid bill to provide Ukraine with $61 billion in military aid last night, which was expected to include this ordinance. However, the State Department spokesman Vedant Patel said that the US leader had privately already given the green light for the ballistic missiles to be sent.
The United States provided Ukraine with long-range ATACMS at the president's direction. He quietly directed his national security team to send ATACMS to Ukraine for use inside Ukrainian sovereign territory in February. They started moving as part of the military aid package we announced on March 12th, and those missiles arrived in Ukraine this month.
The US had avoided sending the missiles that Patel spoke of until now because the Biden administration considered that it would be seen as escalatory by the Kremlin. The missiles can hit targets over a range of 300 kilometers. The New York Times reports that they were used for the first time in recent days to strike an airfield in Crimea.
And Russia has vetoed a UN Security Council resolution on not deploying nuclear weapons in space. China abstained. The proposal would have reconfirmed a global commitment that dates back to 1967, which bans nuclear weapons in orbit. The vote comes just months after the US told allies that Russia could deploy a real or mock warhead into space as early as this year. The Kremlin's alleged ambition underscores what security experts in Washington say is growing competition between the US, Russia and China to develop anti-satellite weapons.
In a moment, we're going to be bringing you more on the mining story, this mega deal. Potentially, we've got more details of it this morning. But before we get to that, there's a piece. I bet you're going to be interested in this, Tom. Look, I always try to bring, you know, something a bit lighter, something a bit more fun, which is all about how you choose your football team. This comes because the Bloomberg opinion columnist Howard Chua-Yuen, who's been in the UK for 6 years, has done this long piece about what is it? What are the questions that you ask? How do you pick your football team if you haven't grown up with one? Do you follow the same men's and women's side? Or do you? Does that matter, loyalty to one club or not? He's asked like a million questions. He's also asked listeners and viewers to write, and readers to write in to tell him, well, how did you choose your side?
It's very easy. I mean, there's just one choice, isn't there? It's Arsenal, obviously.
That's
and
a classic.
Both the women's team, which are currently top of the league and outperform all of their rivals. And, of course, the men's team, also, by the way, top of the league. So it's an obvious choice. I don't see what the dilemma is.
There you go.
Word.
Yeah, you'll have to tell them exactly. No, it's a really lovely piece about about this
social,
kind of cultural phenomenon.
How to
yes.
It's a social lubricant, being able to talk. I'm frankly a bit of a fair weather sport, but it does help in certain social situations to be able to dig into the back pocket for a bit of a chat about football.
Yes.
And if you don't have that, sometimes you can be kind of left out in the social cold.
Yes.
So I get that.
It's exactly
a fun
what
read.
Howard was mentioning, yeah. Okay, so a fun read then for you on the Bloomberg Terminal this morning. Let's also, though, get to Let's get to our top story then. As I mentioned, the mining story. Are we in for a big shake-up in the industry? The price of copper has been soaring this year. BHP has confirmed that it made an all-share proposal to Anglo American, valuing the smaller, slightly smaller mining company at £31.1 billion. Joining us now is Bloomberg's commodities reporter, Martin Ritchie. Martin, thanks for getting back on the radio with us this morning. Now that we have that figure, what do we know then about the deal?
The top line is this is all about copper. BHP is going to become, if this deal goes ahead successfully, it's going to become the world's biggest copper miner, passing other companies like Codelco in Chile and Freeport. And that's because the miners are expecting a big wave of demand for copper. And we've seen over the past few years a number of quite big transactions and a lot of talk about how they want to gain exposure to copper. But this is the first really big deal in the sector. Anglo has some other bits and pieces. It has a metallurgical coal business. It produces diamonds. It produces some potash that's made in fertilizer, and it's got iron ore. But at the core of it is the copper. And this is not just the biggest deal in mining this year, but probably one of the biggest M&A transactions we'll see all year.
Martin, what is your assessment of the likelihood of this deal going through, and what it means more broadly for the sector then?
So obviously, with any major deal, you look at who the rivals might be. Will there be any other companies that could put in competitive bids? Now, those likely candidates in the mining space are Glencore, Rio Tinto, and Vale. So people are saying, you know, they could make bids, but I would just point to a couple of things. Like those companies all have their own reasons not to make a bid. Rio Tinto has invested a lot in building its own copper mines. For example, a huge mine in Mongolia. It has said it prefers that approach to making big deals. Glencore is trying to take over Canadian company Teck Resources to get its copper and zinc assets. And then Vale is actually trying to demerge its metals business. So they're all tied up in their own kind of strategy towards metals, which has kind of left the door open for BHP, I guess, to try and swallow up Anglo, the smaller rival.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really interesting story and one that we'll follow closely. Thank you so much for the update. Martin Ritchie, Bloomberg's commodities reporter then, the BHP proposal for Anglo American. Anglo American's share price currently up more than 12%. We've also got to dig into the bank earnings from the European lenders. Deutsche Bank's first quarter fixed income commodity revenue rising 7%. BNP Paribas a worse than expected 20%. Slump in FIC trading. Barclays investment banking revenue meeting expectations. Joining us now, the man who knows far more about this than me, Bloomberg's EMEA head of finance and investing, Tom Metcalf. Really massively busy morning for you, Tom. So thanks for sparing us some time. What of those three interests you most, I suppose?
Yeah, you've had three big European banks come through. Look, we're in London. I think Barclays is maybe the most interesting story here, and particularly at share price, where, you know, often the first thing I look at for Barclays is how do those fixed rate traders do? And in the past, that's really underpinned the results. This time round, they sort of disappointed, but they were sort of helped by the equities trading doing very well, and perhaps more importantly at the moment, the UK bank, this outlook on NIM, being a real support here. And effectively what Barclays has done, they had a strategy update in February, and they've absolutely hit right on the nail what they said they'd do, which I think for shareholders is a real kind of boon. You know, they want to see just that steady delivery. You know, me being a journalist, I love the volatility and the excitement offered by trading. But actually, I think what today shows is Barclays is maybe becoming a bit more boring, but for shareholders, that is what they really want going forward.
Is Deutsche Bank becoming more boring, or is that, in terms of the trading, part of that business. They've got that exposure to fixed income. How did that come together for Deutsche Bank over in Germany?
Yes, very similar structure to Barclays. Big investment bank, and fixed income is a huge part of that. And I think it's fascinating because their fixed traders did really well. They were up 7%, which is basically in line with some of the best Wall Street banks. So before the shares started trading, I was like, probably Deutsche Bank shares are going to be up. They actually fell, and I think are maybe flat, which again goes maybe back to this point of this, you know, very volatile earnings. The investment bank is just not valued as highly as, say, that more stable recurring revenue. But yeah, those two I always think of as a pair, Deutsche Bank and Barclays. They kind of both European banks with big investment banking or big trading presences. And sometimes they move in lockstep, but today it looks like Barclays maybe has a slight edge.
Okay. Other interesting stories. I mean, loan loss provisions or bonuses or buybacks. I mean, those are always interesting stories too.
Yeah, and you had, I think it was the CFO saying they're a little bit worried over in Frankfurt when they look at the UK and there's this bonus cap which has been removed, allowing, you know, some banks to take advantage of that. So right now in the UK, there was a rule, this is the EU rule, that you could only have effectively twice the bonus of your salary. Well, you compare that to New York, where bonuses can be many multiples, so you might get a smaller fixed bit, but your bonus can really jump. And effectively in the UK, that's now been rolled back post-Brexit. It's a very, very difficult thing to sort of implement in terms of a change. If you can imagine everyone's on contracts, how many people are going to want to sort of move away from a very high fixed pay into bonuses? But as time goes on, you know, I'm expecting that to sort of effectively be rolled out. And that is potentially a bit of a competitive advantage, I say bit of. But it's interesting that Deutsche Bank chose to sort of raise this. And you know, it's one of those classic messaging, you know, by an executive going, hey, regulators, take notice of this. We think it's a bit of a problem. Is there anything you can do to kind of help us out?
To tech now, and a disappointing earnings report from Meta has tech investors on edge. The Facebook owner's outlook for weaker sales, and it was the outlook rather than the quarterly results themselves. It was the outlook plus the higher costs forecast. Underlining the questions about the impact of AI. Shock horror to investors. You actually have to spend to make that AI come to the fore, and it's expensive. Let's bring in Bloomberg's tech editor here in London, Olivia Solon. Olivia, kind of talk to us about the investor reaction to this. Why are they so surprised? It costs $40,000 for a GPU from NVIDIA. We know they're buying thousands of these.
I think everyone just got so excited about AI. There's been so much hype over the last year, ever since ChatGPT was unleashed on the world. And so I think perhaps people have been expecting more immediate returns on that investment. But yes, as you say, it's very expensive to hire the engineers, to build these models, to kind of get all the infrastructure, the data centers, the chips to do the training, and then figure out how to put this into their business. You know, so I guess we're specifically talking about generative AI rather than AI more broadly, because Meta and others have been using that very effectively for years.
Yeah. We also get earnings out today. Microsoft, Alphabet and Intel out of the US this evening, thinking about that 9 p.m. London time. How do you think that is going to play out? Because actually the kind of disappointment around Meta had such a widespread impact on shares yesterday.
Yeah. Well, I think Microsoft probably has the biggest head start in terms of rolling out generative AI tools across its paid for products. Alphabet is kind of playing catch up. We know it's been a leader in AI, in AI breakthroughs for like other types of machine learning, but for generative AI, it's sort of been kind of trying to play catch up. And so it has announced a bunch of ways that it's rolling these kind of generative AI tools throughout its products, but I don't think we're going to see the kind of gains from that quite yet.
Yeah, and then there was the controversy around its Gemini model as well.
Yes.
and the fallout from that. You've been writing about how some executives, at least, are not ready for AI. Really, really interesting piece worth checking out on the terminal and on Bloomberg.com. What's behind that?
Right, this was a survey of chief information officers, so IT people within, I think, 700 companies. And the general sense was, as you know, as we kind of seem to be learning, that most companies haven't really figured out how to make money from AI, and they need at least a couple more years to really integrate AI tools into their products and services. Some of the main kind of concerns are how long it takes to implement, security concerns, potential biases in AI systems, and of course, intellectual property issues.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, your morning brief on the stories making news from London to Wall Street and beyond.
Look for us on your podcast feed every morning on Apple, Spotify and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
You can also listen live each morning on London DAB Radio, the Bloomberg Business app and Bloomberg.com.
Our flagship New York station is also available on your Amazon Alexa devices. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 11:30. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Join us again tomorrow morning for all the news you need to start your day, right here on Bloomberg Daybreak Europe.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.